morning and welcome to the Old School podcast about a host of things, primarily education, but we do dabble. We do tiptoe into the to the waters of other topics such as history and culture and politics. Not really politics. Sport. We can do sport. So and with me in this endeavor is my good friend, Dr. Stephen Bourgeois. Good morning, Dr. Bourgeois.
Hi, Miller. It's good to see you and hear you this morning. We've had a lot of guests on and lately, which is great. And here we are together. It feels a little odd not to have a third person that we're engaging with. You know, it's like, what are we going to even talk about?
And let's, you know, what's there to say? You know, so, but so yes, we are singularis, as it were, right now. However, we do have Dr. Rick Westfall coming back in a couple weeks. And we do have a husband and wife minister duo that will be joining us in a few weeks, talking about the state of religion and things of that nature. And let's cross our fingers, not an elementary school teacher. We've given up the ghost on that one. No elementary school teacher will be seen with us. But I do have a good friend who is a geopolitical expert regarding China. And so there's a chance that we'll be able to get her on, and hopefully, we'll see, talk about things happening with China. It's a kind of a big, political issue facing a lot of people internationally. And so that's what we're going to, hopefully we'll get her on. We'll get a chance to talk about it then.
It sounds all innocent, you making this plug, but what it means is suddenly we're going to need to read up and get smarter to deal with these people, every one of them in their area. I think you fancy yourself an expert in China, Southeast Asia, because of your master's thesis, and also you're studying that. So you have an advantage here, Miller. I'm a little concerned.
I have only a slight advantage insofar as the musings and and the goings-on of China at the turn of the 20th century has any impact on the current geopolitical issue. But
well, good for you for bringing people in, because I've heard from the grapevine that people are just growing tired of our endless banter, and whenever we bring somebody on, we're on our best behavior.
Yes, I have heard that, although I have also heard that there is something to be said for our stupid banter that we do with one another and only with one another. So perhaps there's a fine line to walk between guests and just the two of us. But anyway, before we get going, we have a very interesting topic for today. I have a question for you. So there is, as you know, we are nigh upon the beginning of the 2024 baseball season. And there's a baseball player by the name of Joey Votto. He was a longtime Cincinnati Reds first baseman. He is at the end of his career, but he was looking for one more season, and his hometown team, the Toronto Blue Jays, picked him up. The Canadian native was picked up by the Blue Jays on a minor league contract. I don't know if he's made the team yet. Perhaps he will by the time this thing airs. But anyway, so leading up to his being signed by the Blue Jays, he was doing these videos, these kind of really, you know, silly videos on whatever platform he was using, basically saying, listen, someone needs to sign me. I'm going crazy. I'm focusing on too many other things. And one of the things he focused on was the fact that people did not put the carts at the grocery store or department store into the cart corral. And he said that what he was going to start doing was he was going to start from longer and longer distances, trying to ram a cart into the corral and see if he can make it, almost like golf shots. My question to you, though, is this just created quite a bit of controversy. What percentage do you think of the times that you're at a grocery store do you put the cart back in the corral or in a corral?
It's like the longest question I've ever heard. And I'm trying to bring track back to minor league baseball you were mentioning and some platform and
carts, there's context.
Golf cart.
Called context.
Grocery carts. Okay, I'm back with you. Now you asked me personally. This is like a personal question about my own practice. I've never not taken the cart back ever in my days. I always take it back put it in there.
Take it back into the store, or do you take it into one of the corrals in the parking lot?
One of the corrals. I mean, that's where I shop. There's always a corral, and you put it in there. You have to, yeah. Otherwise, what the alternative is, just stupid. You know, you just leave it out there so those things roll. I mean, yes, that's the whole thing. So if there's any wind or any hill, it could, you know, damage another car. And I certainly wouldn't like to be damaged by those. I am offended when I see people leave them out there, and people do all the time, where they wouldn't hire that person to go grab them. So it's a moral issue. It's a decadence, a deficiency of caring about your fellow man, I think. And so I'm not happy about it, but I do my part.
Well, I was listening to this conversation on the podcast Baseball Today with Chris Rose, who's known for his baseball stuff, but also his NFL stuff, as well as Trevor Plouffe, a former baseball player with the Minnesota Twins and the Oakland A's. And Trevor Plouffe said he probably puts the carts in the corral 90% of the time. And Chris Rose says that it is a moral failing on his part that he doesn't do it the other 10% of the time. You hinted at this. Is this a sign of a society that is crumbling? The fact that people cannot manage to take a cart that's on wheels, so ideally easy to get to the corral, and simply put it in a corral that cannot be more than 20 feet away?
Yeah, I wonder about that person, or actually it's usually a bunch of teenagers who are hired to do this, you know, but they're really hired to move them back. And
right.
But then suddenly they have to go all over the place, and people probably leave them the farther they are from that corral. You know, we could study that and just see when, but often you see them parked on kind of the side of a curb and some grass with a tree next to it. So that means people are thinking about, we don't want this to roll, but I'm not going to take the extra 20 steps. And so they're making a calculation, and maybe they're thinking about the employment numbers and thinking, you know, we could, you know, have three more high school kids employed if I just leave this. But that's a slippery slope moral argument. I'm not crazy about that type of a calculation. So I think they're just plain lazy. That's all I can come up with.
All right. And you know, in all likelihood, you are speaking to perhaps 80% of our listening audience.
I am.
Do you think that 80% of our listening audience never puts, or does not always put, the cart in the corral?
That just sounds really if people who would listen to us probably have the moral fortitude to put, I would say that our listenership is strong in putting things back where they belong. But as far as the local gentry who leave them out there, I don't know. I mean, but you develop this idea of humanity by actions like that, because it's a great thing, because nobody's watching. I guess they could have cameras there, but there's no penalty. It's just something that's completely private, anonymous, but God is watching, right?
So you're saying it's the living embodiment of the axiom that character is what you do when no one is watching.
You nailed it right on the around the side of the head, like a nail thing. But yeah.
Now, when you see a cart and not in its proper place, do you ever curse silently, outwardly?
You're transitioning to our other topic, but I wanted to ask you personally, because I have a high opinion of Bear Miller. Do you put the cart away?
Always.
Okay. I knew it.
Always. It's not a question.
Well,
like I said, the closest corral is never more than 20 feet away.
Yeah.
And so it seems like the height of just sloth not to put the damn cart in the corral. Or what I'll sometimes do is if I have arrived at a grocery store and I'm walking towards the store, if I see someone finishing putting groceries into their cart, I will say, "Can I take that back for you?" And usually they're very grateful, and I'll take the cart and I'll deposit it. If I don't need it, I'll deposit it in its proper place in the store. That's how far I go.
Yeah, and none of this surprises me. but it's my calculation is about 40% of people, maybe more, don't put the cart away. That sound about right?
Not a good sign.
It is.
Yeah, it's not a good sign. So do you ever curse when you see a cart propped up on two wheels onto the grassy knoll of a parking lot?
I don't exclaim it audibly, but I'll just kind of shake my head.
Okay.
You know, but no, I don't think it's not that important to me. But after this podcast, I'll probably lace the world with profanity because I'll think about it more. That this is a real problem. So, but no, I don't curse at that point. I don't know if I've ever cursed before.
Well, okay. Well, first of all, that's stupid. Second of all, so yes, our topic today has to do with profanity, and it's, and I shall say that there may be some profane words spoken. It won't be the mother of all profane words. We're not animals. We're not barbarians. But there could be a few maybe milder forms of profanity that might pop up in this podcast episode. But your erroneous statement that you just made, that you never curse, leads me to the first question, because I know that that statement is not true. Have you ever had a period of your life where you cursed a lot?
That's a really good question. The rumor has it that when I was working on my dissertation and actually the whole doctoral program, I was more prone to these exclamations. And so it's almost a legend within the family. That's a time that I didn't really have a filter, because there was a lot of tension. And if anything bad happened, or I stubbed my toe, whatever it was completely an overreaction. But it was always one of those, not a word that we even would say on this podcast. I'll give you that.
So what would you say is your favorite curse word?
Sound like
James. And again, you don't have to say it. You can maybe just give the first letter. I think we can all figure it out.
Is that James Lipton? Is that his name who asked that?
Yeah, James Lipton on the Inside the Actor's Studio. He used to have a 10 question questionnaire that he would always ask people. And one of the questions was, what is your favorite curse word? And you say,
This puts me in a bad light, because then you're not going to say it for yourself. But I think I will. I think
this is a partnership. So
okay. Well, the one starting with F is the most satisfying to say. Because you're not holding anything back, and it's complete. You didn't leave anything on the table when you say that. What about you, Herr Miller?
I think now this is questionable whether you would actually refer to this as a curse word, but I love the word bastard. I think it's a great word. It may be the Jew in me.
Yeah, we call it.
It may be the Jew in me, because all the old Jews I knew growing up always said bastard, but.
Yeah.
Although there's nothing quite satisfying. Mark Twain said that profanity provides a sense of relief denied even to prayer. And so there is something that's kind of therapeutic about shouting the F word or shouting some other kind of word. Now, I don't remember cursing as a kid. Matter of fact, I kind of took the adults around me had a philosophy, and we can discuss the validity of this philosophy, that cursing is a sign that of a limited vocabulary. But I didn't really curse a lot as a kid. It wasn't until I got into the Marine Corps that the cursing really kicked into gear, and it, to the point where I didn't even know I was cursing. There's a story that I come back from boot camp and extensive training, and I had like 2 weeks at home, and I was walking back to my house from somewhere, and my sainted mother, my dearly departed sainted mother, was in the house, and I noticed a police car down the street. And I walked into the house and said, "Mom, what's the effing police car doing here?" And she said, "Excuse me?" I said, "The effing..." And then halfway through that, I realized what I had said. And of course, I did what any dutiful, respectful son would have done. I asked for an apology, or I apologized, right? Asking for forgiveness. And I tried very hard not to do it again. But the Marine Corps really, among all the good things that it did for me, it can also be said that it taught me an extraordinary array of profane words, multiple compound words, words together that really should never be together. I was taught that from my Marine Corps days.
And in the transition to civilian life, was that difficult, or did it take you some time? You mentioned that example with your mother, but in beyond that, outside of the family, did it take some time to adjust?
It was an adjustment, not just from the point of view of profanity, but just because in the Marine Corps, all jokes are fair game. Mm-hmm. And they may be jokes about people, the size of people, the race of people, the whole gamut. Everybody said everything. And, you know, you're sitting in amongst a group of a very multi-diverse group of people. And it's all fair game. And then when you get out of the military, you realize that in polite company, there are certain things that you don't talk about. There are certain things you don't joke about. And there are certain things you don't say. And so for me, it was an adjustment, because I went from the Marine Corps to college. Now, college is not like it is today. Good Lord. I probably would have been kicked out by the end of the first semester. But back in the early 90s, it was a bit more foolish and fancy free. But yeah, it was an adjustment, to be sure.
That's funny that you were banned from a university for your language.
I'm saying I would be if I went from the Marine Corps into college today. They probably would have to take me through a detox session before I actually get released out to the general public.
I wonder what that would look like, the detox. I think that
the communists call it re-education camps, but
but I think that, you know, kids, high school kids, you know, when they're in their own group, you know, they're pretty creative in their words, but they don't hold back. My impression is that there's a, I don't know what happens, but there's this immediate filter when they're around an adult or a teacher where they turn it off. I mean, so you don't hear a lot of that, you know, when in the classroom. And if you do, they, I'm sure you would give them a harsh redirect. Has that happened to you in school as a teacher?
Rarely. I mean, we talked about it before that when I was teaching, my personality, my persona was such that I did not have as many behavioral issues. And you would call cursing maybe a behavioral issue. I didn't have as many as perhaps the average bear. But every once in a while, someone will say something. And usually, depending on how they say it, I mean, they just say, you know, I don't know, they shit or something along those lines. If they say that, just it like it slips out, then I'll say, "Hey, let's try to use a different word, shall we?" You know, where I try not to make too big of an issue of it. I try not to get too upset about it because it's not that upsetting. But just to, because as you say, typically kids have a way of filtering themselves when they're around certain people, but every once in a while they slip. And so I treat it as a slip. Now, if someone said a profane word in anger, which I had that a couple of times. You know, I had a kid that yelled at me and used the F word. I said, hey, look at you. You used the F word. That's creative. Where'd you get that from? You know, just basically publicly shame them. But I also, not to get angry, because I learned a long time ago, whatever a kid does in a classroom has very little to do with the teacher. That kid's got other issues, you know. And so a kid yelling the F word in class almost said it. I said, a kid saying the F word in class, you know, I'm not going to get angry about it, but you better believe you're going to hear about it, you know. And so it's just a question of how they respond to the attempt at redirection.
Wow. Well, they have a mental issue of being kind of crazy because you are an imposing figure, you know, and so for them to try that, they probably know what's going to happen. So you just say that first word, and then, oh boy.
But I'm not going to hit anybody, but
well,
how did you handle it?
No, but your redirect is for the whole class at that point. And that's, I mean, because I don't recommend public displays and kind of taking a kid on publicly with your words, but we've all done it, and sometimes it's expedient, sometimes it helps, you know. I remember doing that once when I was at a new school. I came in mid-year replacing a teacher who left, and so there were some issues there, and I felt, okay, who's the loudest and most annoying and whatever. As soon as he said something, he was greeted by a tirade that was memorable. My students mentioned that years later. That was really, really pretty harsh. I said, I know, but it felt really good, you know, which is not saying a lot about me, but sometimes you have to do that, but not very often. Once or twice in your career is enough, probably.
It does not pay to yell. It does not pay to yell back, you know.
No. But you're mentioning just the word. There was a episode of South Park, I think around 2000, 2001, back when we were both in Fort Worth. Somehow Comedy Central allowed them to, you know, use the S word, and so they the whole episode was about that, and they had a counter in the bottom, and it went up to like 162 uses because all the kids were saying it, because normally it's bleeped out, right? But it was right there, and I just read that there were actually 200 because they also had it in writing, you know, like 36, was that math? Yeah, 36 times. So they hit 200 uses of that. And by the end, it did have this effect that, you know, I mean, they even said it's, the impact is gone. It's no longer fun.
Right.
You know, so they just changed it right back to poop or something. And that was the end of the episode. But I mean, you know, more than I do about the great Lenny Bruce and what was his take on profanity.
Well, I think, when you talk about a lot of those initial comics, I mean, Lenny Bruce is probably the first comedian. I mean, okay, so there's a difference. There's a difference between the comedians in clubs back in the 60s and then what was done in a more public format. Because I think in the clubs, I mean, you had people like Lenny Bruce, you had, what's his name? The guy, Fred Sanford.
Red Fox.
Red Fox. You listen to some of the old Red Fox tapes, or you listen to the old Lenny Bruce tapes. And for Lenny Bruce, it became a political issue because he was being harassed by law enforcement, and it became a First Amendment issue. So for Lenny Bruce, it was more of a political statement to be able to say what he wanted to say in public. Strangely, we find ourselves back there now, you know, where people go to comedy clubs and they're offended. You know, it's like, don't go to comedy clubs then, moron. You know, what's wrong with you? But I think everyone who went to his shows knew what they were getting into. I think the same thing for Lenny Bruce. I just think that for whatever reason, the cops were kind of zeroed in on Lenny Bruce. maybe is where he was. I'm not sure. But those first comedians, I mean, George Carlin was a pretty straight-laced guy when he started it in the late 60s. I mean, he started out as as kind of clean-cut, wearing a suit, you know, on the Ed Sullivan Show. And then at some point in the late 60s, he started the hippy-dippy weatherman routine, you know, with the hippie doing the weather and stuff like that. And then he becomes the iconic figure that many people associate with him of the 70s. But the thing is that profanity, the power and the interest of profanity was in the seldomness in which it was used. Nowadays, it is used so often where, I mean, it seems like there does not seem to be any more filter about when and where profanity can be used. Now, there is, of course, but there seems like a lot of these barriers are breaking down. Some people might consider it a good thing. I wonder, it probably is not. To what degree have you seen a change in where and how profanity is employed?
So that's a hard question. I mean, what you said about really using it in a witty fashion, you know, I feel like the subtlety is gone, you know, but that's true about language in general. I don't know. I mean, we're in a pretty insulated culture, you know, where we live. And so, there are different, you know, parts of the country, parts of the world, you know, in cities and things where things are quite different. So I think that in a way for us, you know, living where we do, we kind of lose our edge and our ear for that. And so it sounds a little bit different to us than if we were in that context.
Well, have you ever challenged somebody for cursing in front of you, in front of your children when they were children? Have you ever challenged somebody beyond the classroom on people who said a untoward word?
I'm sure it happened a lot with students.
Yeah.
You know, that's a control thing, and that's them testing the boundaries. So you can't let things like that go. But you don't write them up.
But in the wild.
In a what? In a wild?
In the wild.
Oh, in the wild. Yeah, because you can't write a detention notice or an infraction in the wild. You're walking down the street. Here you go. Sign here. You're going to get detention now. I don't usually correct people, you know, with what they say. I can't think of any examples, you know, for something like that. I think about the show Curb Your Enthusiasm, where that's kind of the whole thing, is people are calling each other on what they say and what they do. And
right.
David is really comfortable on either side of that.
Right.
But no, I tend not to confront somebody about what they say, particularly with profanity. I don't think it's my business.
Well, it's interesting because, you know, my wife, more so when we were in our early part of our marriage, she was distressed about the amount of times that I would confront people in public for whatever reason. Why are you laughing?
Well, even since I've met you, you've toned it down. Because you told me stories of, I mean, like happening, well, this happened yesterday, I was in a waiting room or whatever.
Yeah.
So tell me about that, the early days of Ross Miller.
Well, the early days, and it wasn't just about cursing. You know, it was reminiscent of Tommy Lee Jones and Lonesome Dove saying, I can't tolerate rudeness in a man. You know, so there were times when I felt, I felt that someone needed to say something.
So you pull them off their
and well, but I remember one time at the baseball park, baseball game one time, we were taking a shuttle from the baseball stadium to a local bar where we met the shuttle. And a lot of people were taking the shuttle. And there was this old lady and her son, I guess, in the front of the line. And there was this couple, they must have been about in their 30s. I was in my 30s at the time. And they had two teenage sons, or closer, they seemed like teenage sons. And they actually barreled up to the front, nearly knocking the woman over, the old lady over. And I looked at the two kids who had kind of hung back for various reasons, well, I don't know for what reason. But I said, congratulations, your parents are jerks, you know. and I may have said something worse than the word jerk, but the notion, and there was another situation where I was talking to this guy when I was waiting in line someplace, and he had a little baby boy. And this is before I had my daughter, so this was before my whatever insight I picked up about parenting since then. But I said, I find it, we're just talking. And I said, I find it fascinating looking at a kid and kind of trying to guess what they're going to become. You know, are they going to become a doctor, or will they be a teacher, or will they be an engineer? And the guy, swear to God, the guy said, well, hopefully nothing like a teacher though. And I said, I think I just figured it out. I think that kid's going to grow up to be a jerk, you know? And again, I said another word because I was offended by this guy.
They don't know you're a teacher. They're just talking.
I know, but I let him know I was a teacher.
Just some dude who appears out of nowhere. Wow.
And I have, over the years, I have called out people for cursing, like in front of my daughter or something like that, you know, where, I mean, it's not happened often. It's not like we're like at a ball game or something like that. Like my kid understands that sometimes I think those kind of things are said, but it seems as if where it is acceptable to curse, you know, I told guys at the gym, you know, I'm sitting next to the nurse in there, you know, and I don't understand. Maybe it shouldn't bother me. And maybe like you, maybe you're right. It's none of my business. But I just get annoyed at the lack of common courtesy that the practice seems to be in violation of.
Okay, so now you're getting back to character. And I wonder if the people who curse without caring who's around them are the ones who don't do, you know, put away their shopping cart. There's some connection there.
Mm. You want to do like a Venn diagram, like research project?
I guess so. You know, it would be nauseating because, you know, again, there's cursing, which is an exclamation, you know, of being annoyed. And I mean, your inner dialogue, you know, because people think in words, that's the way that it works.
Yeah.
And when you're alone, you know, I'm working. You know, my office is upstairs at A Heart Solutions. And
yes.
Every once in a while, there's a really loud curse word that comes from this room where I am right now that can be heard all over the house. Even, you know, in the last few weeks, it happened.
Yep.
Something annoys me. You know, I get an email that annoys me and it's really loud. And it's like, where did that come from?
Yeah.
You know, but in my mind, it was only, you know, you could only hear it detected in this room, but it thundered throughout the house. So that's a different type of cursing, you know, because it's kind of like your inner thoughts coming out.
Yes. But, you know, now it should be said, I don't challenge people often, especially nowadays, about anything. But I think for me, the times that I have challenged people, it's when it kept on and kept on and kept on to a point where it didn't make any sense. And there seemed to be a forgetting of kind of social mores.
Right.
As far as like how you use it, the way you use it. I mean, again, if I'm sitting next to someone on a bus and they drop a book on their foot and they say something, how do you hold a person to that, you know? But I'm talking about a person who in just a normal conversation is talking like Bill Burr on the stage, you know? And to me, I don't care about cursing. It doesn't bother me. We've told my daughter, listen, it's just a word. You know, we don't get overly upset. We want her to come to us. She, I heard this word today. Really? This should be interesting. What word did you hear today? You know, So she knows that I sometimes will say something in frustration or in pain or whatever the case may be. She's heard that. She maybe heard something on a TV show or a movie. And we just tell her, listen, it's just a word, but it's not a word you want to say in front of other people. You know, and that's basically the approach that we take to it. Okay. So it's not like I'm some sort of profanity vigilante cruising the streets, the mean streets of Fort Worth looking for people cursing in public. But I do think I do wonder if it says anything about culture or if we're just two old guys who are reminiscent of the days when people were better behaved in public.
I think it's knowledge of your surroundings, and that I think that's what gets to us, because it's, you know, when, you know, people are cursing and just their whole language, like you've kind of described, it just keeps coming out, and not respectful of people around them. And that probably gets our dander up a little bit. Whereas, I mean, you and I watching a football game, you know, maybe the Oregon Ducks or something, and something bad happens. I mean, I'm not, you know, using this high level, this vernacular talking about this, really upset that they went for it on fourth down for the third time, you know, and it just builds up. But that's how we talk to each other when we're quiet, right? But if your wife were there, you know, every once in a while, maybe something, but for the most part, it's a different thing comes out, right?
Mm-hmm.
So being around, aware of your surroundings and respectful, you know, is something, you know, that I'm not going to be a vigilante like Herr Miller, but it becomes more concerning just because they're not aware.
They're not observant of the things around them. They're not understanding of what's around them.
Yeah.
I think it's one of those things where there's bound to be a change in this, and how and in what ways profanity would be acceptable. But I don't hold with the idea that I have the right to say anything I want to say. I think all of that is relative, and it depends on where you are, you know. Now, like I said, when you're among close friends, you know, you say what you want to say. I mean, we all have shameful friends, you know, so we all have friends who may speak in such a way that we may not normally speak, but then you just kind of write that off as part of the experience of being friends with that individual. But, you know, out in public, it becomes kind of a different thing. And it's in that group of behavior, like taking your hat off indoors, or, you know, something along those lines. It's not a serious societal infraction, but you do wonder about the kind of the cumulative effect of a degrading of that sense of context.
Yeah. And for example, if you're in a restaurant and you see a group of people and they're cursing, it affects the vibe of the whole room. And you have a different feeling of them. You sense that there's a lack of character or virtue, you know, the fact that they are talking as if they're in their man cave, you know,
Right. Watching
a game when there are kids next to them. And now I do sound kind of old talking like that.
and it's different if people are talking in hushed tones with one another. Right. You know, if I walk past a table at a restaurant and they're talking relatively quietly and they say curse words, you know, that's fair game. They're being considerate. They're being courteous to those around them. You know, I don't have an issue with that. But like you said, you get a bunch of loud group of teenagers. And let me tell you something. No one wants to approach a table full of teenagers in public. I will. I don't care. I've been teenagers for 30 years.
Yeah, that's right. We're used to that. But yeah, there's something,
but
yeah, you would, most people wouldn't even think of it. You know, they're just annoyed by them and a little bit intimidated by, going over there.
And it's not just teenagers. There's plenty of knuckleheaded adults that do the same thing. But I mean, it's just the idea that there is, is this natural? Is this a kind of a natural evolutionary thing where what we say in public or how we speak in public is going to change? It's going to change in such a way that the older generation isn't going to appreciate.
So I don't know if it's gotten worse or better. I don't really have a clear answer to that. You know, and maybe it's because, you know, I don't get out much, you know, so nobody curses on a Zoom meeting with me or rarely, you know, something.
They're not wearing pants, but they don't curse, but
that's right. So I don't know what's out there. I mean, you look at social media and I don't look at it much, but you know, even, you know, looking at YouTube videos where you see the comments, you know, there's some rough stuff happening there that's completely, you know, overstated and not needed, you know, for that.
Right.
But because typing, it's not like just coming out. You're thinking, I'm going to, you know, drop an F-bomb right here and you type it. So right. It's disingenuous. It's not just flowing. So I don't reading it, because it's just a lack of vocabulary and nuance.
Hmm. Well, it's an interesting kind of idea, and it kind of opens the door to other kind of linguistic things. I find linguistics and I find the development of language fascinating. I think if you're someone like me, there's a great YouTube channel called Rob Words, and it's written by a English-speaking correspondent with Deutsche Welle. And he does this little thing, and he digs into the language. He digs into why the language developed the way it did, how it changed over time. And so I am both cognizant of and interested in the way in which language changes. And that's going to be also, you know, what language is not acceptable as opposed to what is commonly used among others in public. So this is not meant to be necessarily a kind of casting aspersions on the notion of using profanity, because as we both said, we both use it, but it's just a question of how has it changed where you use it and how you use it that makes it kind of fascinating, I think.
Well, and translation, it's, you know, curse words are not a one-to-one translation. There's a whole context around them, which shows that the fact that, you know, some are curse words and some aren't, How did that develop? Why those five words?
George Carlin's seven dirty words.
That's right.
On television.
Yeah. How do they get some bad rap, you know?
Yeah.
Those to others.
Do you think that there are cultures, and we can end with this, but this is kind of interesting tie-in. Do you think that there are cultures in your experience that curse more than Americans? Do you think it is an American thing to be cognizant of where and when and how you curse? Do you think other cultures that you've ever run across, I mean, we've had both our major experiences in Germany, but I mean, do you think that there are other cultures that do it more often and with a lot less of a kind of a social hangup of it?
Every once in a while, I say, I don't know. And to that question, I don't really know, even in German, because people speak to us as Americans in Germany, even though we have really good German, they speak a more formal idiom to us and even around us. And if they're speaking very quickly to each other, we probably can't understand everything they're saying anyways. So it's a difficult question to ask. My tendency is to think that Americans have dirty minds and dirty words come out, and our culture is fading. We're the end of the Roman Empire. So this is a sign of the end, and it's an American problem. Most of the things that we talk about are American problems.
I don't know. I mean, I have talked to my friends in Germany before about the preponderance, the usage of the F word. Everybody uses it, it seems like. Yes, everybody.
Yeah.
And then, yes, a word like Scheiße, shit, you know, in German is more a modifier than it is so much as a profane word. Right. Although I think people recognize it, that that's a word you wouldn't necessarily use in front of everybody.
Right. And it would be more translated like crap.
Yeah.
You know, and if you say that is crap, yeah. Scheiße, that it's slightly different.
Right. As far as the severity of the word and how it's perceived. So I think it'd be kind of interesting to see some type of study. Maybe someone's done one. I don't know. But it'd be interesting to see a study of people and, you know, across international, across national boundaries, and how profanity is treated.
Well, we can do that study here, Miller. We'll do a random.
Get some fancy schmancy university to pay for it all. We'll just travel the world and
absolutely, and search for some truth to this, and we're going to investigate those damned carts also, because that really, the more I think of it, those two are tied together. There's something that's a moral deficiency that's out there.
It is. It is indeed. All right. Well, in that case, with that, we'll wrap things up. As I said, we had Dr. Westfall coming up in a couple of weeks, as well as a podcast over religion, and possibly, if I can seal the deal, maybe we can get a podcast over some more current geopolitical issues happening in East Asia as it relates to the United States and how it deals with it. So some interesting stuff coming up. Until then, in the midst of March Madness, a madness that does not seem to afflict the two of us as much, I shall say adieu, Herr Dr. Bourgeois.
Auf Wiedersehen, Herr Miller, you old bastard. Touché.